Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation. Hello and welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. Quick news. I'm your host, Dan Perkins. Springfield, Illinois. The state saw record-breaking marijuana sales in June, including from out-of-state visitors. In the middle of a global pandemic and one of the worst unemployment crises in American history, the state of Illinois' marijuana retailers saw the busiest month on record in June, racking up more than $47.6 million in total sales. No matter how you slice the data released by the state on Tuesday, recreational cannabis sales last month shattered existing records in the state, which began legal sales to adults on January 1st of this year. Stores in Illinois sold nearly a million cannabis items in June, 5,000 more than any previous month, and brought in record sums from in-state residents of $35.3 million, and out-of-state visitors contributed $12.4 million alike. Washington, D.C. Feds hire hazmat firm for marijuana eradication training. The U.S. Forest Service will spend nearly $50,000 to hire hazardous materials consulting firm to train employees of how to safely remove marijuana growth on public lands under a newly awarded government contract. The agency says that the training is needed to protect the employees, some of whom reportedly have been taken to emergency rooms after being exposed to hazardous chemicals while they're clearing marijuana plants in years past. Before 2016, we had numerous number of our agents and officers getting sick in our marijuana cultivation sites on public lands, requiring trips to the emergency rooms with possible long-term health effects. In 2016, we received our first citation from OSHA for not providing our personnel the training and the PPE equipment needed to operate in this environment. Going forward, employees will need to pass a hazmat class before they can participate in cannabis clearing operations. New York City. States with medical marijuana laws saw a 20% drop in some opioid prescriptions. States with active medical marijuana laws saw certain opioid prescription rates drop nearly 20% compared to the prohibition states. A first-of-its-kind study out of Columbia University Irving Medical Center has found. Authors said that the findings underscore the importance of providing patients with pain management alternatives, such as cannabis, in efforts to reduce opioid use. Drug overdoses remain the leading cause of injury-related death in the United States, and the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention reports that 68% of those deaths involve illicit or prescription opioid. The new study examines opioid prescriptions made specifically by orthopedic surgeons, who it notes are the nation's third largest prescribers of opioids. Medical cannabis laws were associated with a statistically significant reduction of 72,000 daily doses of hydrocodone annually. Our final story comes from Denver, Colorado. Shelf space at a premium as more brands enter cannabis space and retailers use pay-to-play practices in their shops. As more brands enter the marijuana products marketplace, competition for retail shelf space is key in adult use markets such as Colorado and Washington State, and it's intensifying. While the number of new brands and consequently the amount of new products continue to rise, growth in the number of retail stores has not kept pace, according to the 2020 edition of the Marijuana Business Factbook. This has fostered a pay-to-play mentality among marijuana retailers, with some now charging brands a fee to occupy shelf space in states such as California and Nevada. Known as slotting fees, the practice requires brands to pay anywhere from $500 to $15,000 a month for a premium space on cannabis retail shelves. The use of slotting fees coincides with the rise in popularity of vape products, which was a major contributor to retail shelf space crunch. This has been your American Cannabis Conversation Quick News. I'm Dan Perkins. Let's see who's on the show today. First off is our good friend Dr. Jordan Tischler, who's going to talk about the troubles that dispensaries were already having before COVID-19. Next, we're going to have John Rulak, who is going to talk about CBD for pets with organic qualities. Then we have Joel Marion, who's written a book about dieting during the pandemic And we finish the show with Phil Silverman, who is an attorney, will help us understand what cannabis owners need to do to be prepared for the post-COVID-19 pandemic. Let's start the conversation.
Want to find out if cannabis can help your medical condition? It's time to hear from our cannabis doctor on call.
Welcome back, and joining us in the conversation today is one of our favorite guests, Dr. Jordan Tischler, who is our America's Cannabis Conversation doctor on call. Doctor, welcome to the program again.
It's always my pleasure to be here. Good to hear from you. How are things?
Good. It's a little hot here in Florida, but it's is summertime, so we just deal with it. We have a problem here in Florida now. We've been put on the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut's hit list. If you come from Florida, I think there are 6 or 8 states, and you come into any one of those 3 states, you have to agree to sequester yourself for a minimum of 14 days before you can go out into New York. So I hear that, Doctor. I have no idea how they're going to enforce it. But anyway, question I wanted to start off with today is you, last time we talked, you told me your practice was really busy, and I wanted to first verify that that's still the issue today. And what's the temperament of your clients, that your patients that you're working with some dispensaries in Boston and the Boston area being robbed and broken into? Are they concerned about what's going on?
You know, I haven't heard anything about that. And I think part of that is because, you know, we've kind of started to mix our apples within our oranges, right? I mean, that is to say, somehow we have medical cannabis dispensaries. And then what we have really are pot shops or retail operations. And somehow we're all lumping that into the word dispensary. So my patients, by and large, are not going to retail outlets, which seem to be, from what you've told me, the places that are, you know, being robbed. The medical dispensaries so far, I haven't heard of any issues whatsoever.
You're making a distinction between medical marijuana dispensaries and recreational, but do you have some dispensaries in the Boston area that are both?
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, unfortunately, what's happening here is that they're so busy licensing these retail shops that very few new medical dispensaries, in fact, none that I'm aware of, are opening up. And from what I understand from some of the folks I know who run some of these medical dispensaries, there's an awful lot of paperwork and capital involved in starting a medical facility that you simply don't have to do if you're doing a recreational facility. And so that, I think, has pushed, you know, prospective owners to say, sure, we'll just do rec. And I think that that's, you know, problematic and also goes along with the rhetoric that we're seeing, the messaging, which is, you know, you don't need to do this medically, just go get some weed and everything will be fine. And that's a great message if your goal is to sell a lot of cannabis, and maybe not so good if you're a patient.
Well, you know, you raise a very interesting question. I've never asked you this before, I should have, and I apologize for not doing it. But in your mind, as a medical practitioner, as a doctor who works in this field, do you see a significant difference between a medical dispensary and a recreational store?
You know, that's an interesting question. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of ways that these things overlap. But ultimately, it's really about the care that the patient gets. So in our medical dispensaries, generally there are some products which are more appropriate for medical treatment. And under the rules here in Massachusetts, those products are reserved for patients specifically. So that helps make sure that the supply is appropriate and available. But ultimately, what really is at stake here is that, neither a recreational store nor a medical facility should be giving patients advice. So that at the end of the day, what really ought to be happening is there ought to be an appropriate range of products for either medical or recreational use, and the person going to the facility should be then either purchasing the stuff that sounds fun, if the goal is fun, or purchasing what they've been instructed to purchase by their healthcare provider, if this is a medical use. But the last thing that should be happening is somebody should be walking in and saying, what do you got that's good for my backache? Because the people behind the counter haven't the faintest idea how to answer that question. It doesn't stop them from answering it.
Right.
And furthermore, they're salespeople, so they're going to tell you, yeah, buy 3 pounds of weed and smoke it all. That'll be great, right? It's not great for you as a patient, but it's great for their bottom line. And ultimately, I think we have to get past the idea of getting our healthcare advice from people with conflicts of interest like that, as well as a lack of education.
You know, you're raising a very important question that I do want to ask you, because off the record, I have been talking to people who are in the recreational business, and they're saying that the recreational business, quote, doesn't need you, Dr. Tischler, that their ultimate goal is to replace all of the medical shops with recreational, and there doesn't need to have, we don't need medical shops in the distribution chain. And
I think that's absolutely what they want. Absolutely. Because if you think about it, first of all, if they are a dual shop, then they have twice as much regulation to be complying with. But really, ultimately, the problem here is that we physicians are well-trained and generally thoughtful, caring people who understand that medications are double-edged swords and that generally speaking, less is more. And that these things should be employed in the service of a treatment of a specific problem, and that we need to monitor the appropriateness of the treatment and the effectiveness of the treatment and all those things that we would expect from any physician in any field. But ultimately, or at least, I don't want to say ultimately, I think, from the short-sighted point of view, that kind of an approach stands between the seller and selling gobs and gobs of weed, right? If somebody comes from me and I tell them, I want you to take a little bit, 10 milligrams of this edible, then it's at least theoretically difficult for somebody to say, here, have the 5 pounds of weed, right? On the other hand, we also know that the pharmaceutical industry has been doing just fine financially, even with physicians as, gatekeepers, et cetera. And so I think that it's very short-sighted for the cannabis industry to get focused on getting rid of physicians. And in fact, they really probably should be working with the physicians to provide the kind of product and the kind of patient interaction that supports medical. After all, one of the things that we know is that there are about 20 to 30 million Americans who use cannabis on a recreational basis. That's a large number, and lots of business people are very excited by tapping that market. But we also have to remember that there are 180 million Americans over the age of 55, and every single one of those people will develop something that is amenable to treatment by cannabis. But you're not going to tap into that much larger market by just saying, dude, come on over here and we'll give you some weed and you'll feel better, because it's just not going to work. If you look at mainstream America, they may very well get behind the idea of medical cannabis on a legal level, but most people are not accessing cannabis for treatment of their illness because they haven't heard about it, because they don't know enough about it, because they're uncomfortable about it, and that sort of thing. So I doubt very much that we're just going to convince grandma to go smoke a lot of weed. If she wants something that's going to help her with her back pain or whatever it may be, in a very structured, careful, methodical fashion that's going to lead to a good outcome and minimize any sort of difficulties that might arise. I think if we want to get to that level of legitimacy and care, we've got to do this in a more thoughtful fashion, and we've got to do this with medicine, not as, you know, some sort of elbowing medicine out the door.
So let me ask one last question in this segment. Just taking what you're saying, do you have, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, I'm just curious, do you have feedback from your patients about dispensaries, and that feedback will make you not recommend that dispensary or recommend somebody else?
I have feedback from patients in terms of their experience, yes, and also just in terms of the kinds of products that are available at those dispensaries. So yes, I generally try to start with the geography, you know, to provide to point the patient in the direction of something that's relatively convenient for them. But ultimately, since what we need is the kind of product that actually takes care of the patient, that treats the patient appropriately, sometimes there isn't anything that's immediately local that will provide what we need, and then I will recommend something that is perhaps a little further afield but has the kind of product that we need. It is very frustrating. I mean, if I were to write a prescription for any conventional medication, like a blood pressure medication, you know, that can be filled at any drugstore on any corner, and frankly, even in other states. That's a system that works. Right now, the system that we have in cannabis is that every place pretty much makes their own stuff, or at least chooses to carry certain stuff. And so it depends entirely on that dispensary's view of what people would need as to whether they carry something that's at all useful or not. And to the extent that a lot of that decision-making gets driven at the dispensary level by feedback from their customers, who are an interesting mixture of recreational and truly medical, I've seen, you know, medical dispensaries offering, you know, barbecue rub and pizzas and mac and cheese, none of which are anything I would ever recommend to treat anybody with. And,
right.
You know, and I say, well, what made you think that was a good product to make? And they say, well, we did a survey and people said, you know, we want a barbecue sauce, you know. And I say, well, okay, did you start to look at the demographic of the people who are answering your survey? And the answer is no, it's just all of our customers. Okay, so you've got a very mixed population of people,
sure,
who all have medical cards, but some of them are really patients and some of them are you know, there to get what they want for fun. That's driving and skewing that system.
Well, unfortunately, Doctor, we're out of time on this segment. So let's let people know, tell people how they can get in touch with you and your practice if they have questions.
Sure. We welcome questions. The website is the best place to start. It's called inhalemd.com. Again, inhalemd.com. We've got over 100 useful articles that you can read. And of course, you can reach out to us through the website, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Tischler, our America's Cannabis Conversation doctor on call.
Your new cannabis electronic checking account can offer you PIN secure credit and debit cards for your clients. We can place a cashless ATM at your checkout counter, which reduces the amount of cash on hand. Did you know that we can help you bring legacy cash into your new cannabis electronic checking account? No more paying with cash. Making payments with your electronic check is safe and secure. So if you find yourself up at night worrying about somebody breaking in and stealing your cash, consider a cannabis electronic checking account. To find out if a cannabis electronic checking account is right for you, call 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8844. W420RadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today for a second visit is John Rulak, who is the founder and chief hemp officer for RE Botanicals. We're going to talk today about how they formulate product, and then we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about something we've never talked about on this show before, and that's CBD for pets. So welcome back, John.
Good to be back again.
So let's talk about how you formulate, grow, whatever the right terminology is. How do you put your product together that makes you different?
I founded RE Botanicals back in late 2018. And I kind of came by, I was a founder of Nativa, the organic superfood that pioneered hemp foods back in 1999, started out with 500 hemp bars and then stepped down as CEO. 3-4 years ago, and then decided to start up RE Botanicals. And then earlier, last summer, we merged with Palmetto Harmony, and it was a good merger. This company has their own facility, so we process, we grow, process, and extract, and formulate and bottle in Conway, South Carolina.
Know it well.
Yeah. And it's, thanks. Yeah. We're one of the only facilities that's certified organic, FDA registered flower to bottle. So we have our greenhouses, and, you know, genetics variety. We also work with organic farmers, that practice certified organic and more regenerative practices. We bring in the CBD. We have an alcohol extraction process and then also an MCT coconut oil lipid infusion process, two different types. We then take the distillate or the MCT infused oil, and then we blend it and our carrier oil is we're very proud of the, and we've really focused on getting, choosing the best carrier oil. Remember, when you buy a hemp CBD tincture, 90% of it is actually not CBD or hemp. It's actually a carrier oil. The reason why they call it carrier oil is when you put it under your tongue, you hold it there, and then you swallow it, it has to carry to the cell walls, you know, cross the blood-brain barrier, and go through your cell walls, your receptor, it needs to tap into the receptors. And so the carrier oil is really important. A lot of companies use olive oil or hemp oil, which are fine for cooking, but they're long chain fatty acids, like C18, C20 carbon molecules. We use MCT coconut oil, which is a C8 or C10. So they're smaller molecules, which it helps it cross through the cell wall. We also choose certified organic because we use a fresh process versus more an industrial process. So that the coconut, fresh coconuts are harvested, then sent to a facility where they're chopped, and then scooped out the meat, and then dried immediately. They're turned into virgin coconut oil, and then we use a proprietary process where it's then gone through a centrifuge, and now it's liquid coconut oil, so it doesn't solidify. Whereas other ones would use old coconuts, and they have to bleach it and deodorize it, et cetera. So we really like it, and also gives it a nice flavor. And then we add peppermint as one of our flavors, certified organic peppermint, and we have it in different levels of per serving, 15 milligrams, 25, and 50. And we also offer it in larger sizes, 3.4 ounce, 100 ml, and as well as 32 ounce. Some people, you know, buy a 32 ounce from us and use it for, you know, for small manufacturing or juice bars, et cetera. Or maybe they have a big family and they really like CBD. So, and then we also use that same formula with our Relief Body Oil, which is a roll-on little glass vial with a metal tip. And we have one, we use lavender. We use two types of lavender, gives it a very nice aroma. And that's the one that's in the Sprouts and the Safeways. and Fresh Thyme and other stores. And then we have peppermint, lavender, also ginger lime, and mandarin turmeric. So those are, wow. And then we have them in capsules, and then also pet line as well.
So you have a really diverse product. Let me ask you a question in general about, we talked a little bit about the difference in product because of all organic. With all the things that you just articulated, and most of them I don't understand, but you certainly impressed me that you know what you're talking about. How does that affect the price that the consumer actually pays versus somebody who doesn't do all the things that you do?
The irony is that a lot of the products that skip corners, that don't put high quality carrier oils, actually charge more money.
Wow.
You know, it does cost more money to purchase these, you know, higher quality ingredients. But, you know, for instance, our 25 milligram serving 750 milligram bottle retails for $59.99. So it's a very good price point. So we don't necessarily charge a huge amount for just, you know, the price of CBD is definitely coming down. So we set
right.
it at a reasonable price point.
Is it coming down because it's been over, the hemp crop has been overplanted and there's just a huge amount of supply?
There's that, and then just there's more efficiencies coming as the industry matures. So there's probably four times as much flower that was grown than that there's demand for.
Wow. So we're talking right now with John Rulak, who is the founder and chief hemp officer for RE Botanicals. John, I wanted to move on in the last part of the show because you do some things that I've never had anybody on the show to talk about, and that's why and how CBD might help your pet. So tell us a little bit about your pet products and what they can do for, I guess, dogs or cats or any kind of animal. Talk to us about CBD for pets.
Yeah, we're glad to offer CBD. Like humans, animals also have an endocannabinoid system, and hemp is phytocannabinoids, contains phytocannabinoids. So the phytocannabinoids tap into the endocannabinoid system and receptors, and animals have those as well. So we're actually, our top selling SKU on our website is for pets. We've had some pet influencers promote us, and we get a lot of orders on pets for pets. The one thing is you want to start very small, and obviously a German Shepherd, 100 pounds, is going to need a lot more, you know, whereas a 10-pound, you know, small dog would need a lot less.
We've been speaking with John Rulak, who is the chief hemp officer and founder of RE Botanicals. John, how can people get in touch with you and buy your products?
You can go to www.re and then botanicals with an s.com. And also, the Conway, South Carolina company that I merged with, so I have a sister brand called Harmony, and they use the organic MCT coconut infusion process, flower infusion. So, and that's they have a very nice product line, you can get them at palmettoharmony.com. We're going through a new brand change and update, and that's just going to be called Harmony. And it's we have a lot of special needs kids uses it. Janelle, the founder, has a special needs daughter named Harmony, and really reduced the seizures by using this. So she was a mother in need that created a botanical product to give her daughter, and they shares that with the world. So you can learn more about that as well.
Well, unfortunately, John, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining the conversation today. We've been speaking with John Rulak, who is the chief hemp officer and co-founder of RE Botanicals. Thank you for joining us at the conversation, John.
Introducing the new Cannabis Electronic Checking Account. Did you know that in 2019, almost one in five dispensaries were either robbed or broken into? Your business is cash only, because up to now, you didn't have access to a banking account that would allow you to deposit the daily receipts from your business. Some owners have started a banking relationship only to be told in a few months that the institution was closing the account. For the first time, you can now have a reliable business checking account. Yes, I said a secure bank electronic checking account. For more information, call 1-888-420-8844 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins. W420RadioNetwork.com.
This is Dan Perkins, and we're about halfway through today's conversation. I hope you have found the people interesting and helpful. In case you didn't hear all of the interviews in today's conversation, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com to listen to this show. If you missed any of our previous shows, or you want to hear a particular show again, you can go to the archives and download a missed show anytime that's convenient for you. Our goal is to bring a high-quality program that is both entertaining and informative. W420RadioNetwork.com. And now, back to the conversation.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Dan Perkins, and today we're talking to an important author who's written a book about debunking some of the myths in diets, and it's Joel Marion. And he's going to talk to us today about how his book can help small business people, including cannabis business people, get in shape for the rebirth of this economy and having the strength and stamina to rebuild their businesses. So, Joel, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Tell us about your book.
It's called Always Eat After 7 p.m. I developed a book after my own personal health struggles when I started a business, BioTrust Nutrition, 10 years ago. And I was so committed to building the brand, I started working late nights, pulling all-nighters working. Then at the same time, got married, had two daughters. Next thing you know, 18 months later, I built an amazing company, but it came at a heavy price. I was 46 pounds heavier. I wanted to avoid going back to a traditional crash diet. The thought of that was painful to me, but I knew I needed to do something. I was in a pretty embarrassing and shameful spot as a fitness professional who had gained all this weight, even though I'd grown a great company. You know, I wasn't walking my talk. So I started doing some research and kind of turned everything about dieting on its head. I started skipping breakfast, using a form of intermittent fasting. I started eating my largest meal at dinner time with super carbs, having a healthy dessert, and then even having a salty or a sweet pre-bedtime fat-burning snack, and I lost almost 50 pounds in 16 weeks.
Wow.
During this process, we uncovered over 90 studies backing up this style of eating, and so obviously I was the perfect guinea pig for it, and I wanted to prove out the science on my own body before I shared it with the rest of the world.
So Joel, just said a few moments ago that you put on all this weight because you became, these are my words, not your words, but addicted to your business, and you put it high priority. So that sounds like you also didn't pay any serious attention to what you were eating or what you were doing physically. Is that correct?
I think the unstable and inconsistent sleeping patterns led to the cravings that ultimately led to terrible choices. Yes.
And this is having built several small businesses myself, having experienced many of those things, we have a lot of people that are now struggling to keep their businesses alive, whether they're in the cannabis business or anything else. And so we recently saw where the government said that people picked up at least 5 pounds on average during this pandemic, and that wasn't all the way through. You had to go through a realization. I think you said you were up 47 pounds. Is that right?
Yeah, 46 pounds I had gained, yes.
And so what was the turning point for you when you said, wait a minute, this is not good for me, not good for my wife and children? What was the turning point?
It was the look in my wife's eyes. I mean, to me, you know,
once I started seeing the disappointment, even though she wouldn't verbalize it to me, that burden led to me deciding to make a change and take action. And I think we all need that deep reason why, something that's bigger than ourselves and bigger than our own goals and bigger than what we see when we look in the mirror, something that we're fighting for, whether it's our family or some other worthy cause. You have to have your big reason why.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but were you saying, Joel, that it took a realization to look at yourself, but also to look at what you were doing, was doing to your wife and family, to make the decision to do something different?
Yes, it's one thing to wake up in the mirror every day and try to avoid looking at yourself because you're not happy with what you're doing to yourself, but it's another thing to look at a disappointment in the eyes of somebody that you love. Even though she never said it and she'd be supportive, if I was 300 pounds, I know she would. You can just, you can tell. And of course, for me, it's like, would you go to a dentist if he had a big, black, rotten tooth grin? Probably not. And as a fitness professional, really, it also came down to walking my talk. It's about integrity, right? So,
Did your success distract you? Meaning, the fact that you were so successful, caused you to want to try to achieve more, and the success was more important than your health.
That's what happens, is you become so driven and motivated. As entrepreneurs, we can tend to be obsessed with our business. And I was on a mission to create the fastest growing nutrition company in the world. And as a result of that, my health took a back seat to those priorities. So yes, I would say that it was an addiction to growing my business, and understanding that now, looking back in hindsight, I realized that staying healthy through that process only serves me better. So for me, it was, I'm not going to worry about my health right now. I'm young. I need to build this company. I'll deal with that later. Right. And I think this is what we do. And then all of a sudden you wake up one day and it's like, bam, overnight, I'm 46 pounds heavier. So yes, it is all about prioritizing things the right way. And now I know, looking back at all that the diet that I follow and the lifestyle of exercising that I follow actually feeds my business, right? It makes me more disciplined and focused and more productive when I am working on my business.
That's an important point. Can we go back and unpack that a little bit? Because I suspect that a lot of people, myself included, as you're growing a business, there are times when you're not sure it's going to be successful, and you put more time in and it works, and your wife or children pay a penalty for that. But when you achieve that, whatever success is to you, did you find, because you were so overweight, that the success wasn't as rewarding as you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that I think I could have got there a lot more efficiently and a lot more stress-free had I put my health as a priority first. I'm one of those rare individuals that can literally, I can go really hard on very little sleep for several days in a row. And, eventually that stuff catches up with you.
Yeah, somebody once said you can't catch up the sleep that you've lost. You can only go forward.
You can't.
One of the problems that I see in our industry is that we have people who are driven to be successful, and the amount of hours that they have to put in, and with all the regulations and everything else that's going on with the government, the federal and the state government, there aren't enough hours in a day to try and to do what they want to get to do. So how did you change the way you operated your business, which was then bigger, after the realization that you needed to lose weight and eat healthier and be healthier? Did it change the success on your business?
Oh, for sure. And it just changed my entire schedule. Even my family time changed, and I think that one of the key things that everybody needs is accountability. So I reached out to one of my best friends, Dan Long, who used to coach me, and I asked him to hold me accountable to my diet and my exercise. And then I started using, the one thing about, you mentioned about just a lack of time. If you wake up in the morning and you're healthy and you can exercise in a fast state and you can use some high intensity type body weight movements for anywhere from 12 to 20 minutes, like a 30-second burst of a mountain climber with a 30-second rest. And then you follow that up with a 30-second push-up, a 30-second rest. And you do 30 seconds of bodyweight squats, a 30-second rest. Then you'd repeat that round again for like 12 to 20 minutes. Well, when you do that, you can elevate your metabolic rate for up to 48 hours afterwards. Your body will access stored fat cells up to 300% faster, and your brain will release a lot of hormones and chemicals that will make you more focused throughout your day. So if you're short on time and you're an entrepreneur and you're committed to growing your business and you're burning the candle at both ends, this is one of the best ways to fit it in. That way, time is not an excuse. Literally, you can make this happen in 12 minutes.
So when you decided that you had to change what was going on in your life, you wanted to lose the weight, did you actually wind up spending less time in your business and it was still successful?
Yes, I cut back on a lot of my late night working hours. And I found that during the time that I was working on my business, I would get more done in that 4 to 5 hours than I typically would in an 8 hour span, simply because my health was in line. And of course that carries over into your focus. It's just like trying to do focus work with a cell phone on in front of you with a bunch of alerts coming at you. You know, it's like driving from, here in Florida all the way to Michigan, but you decide to stop off in California. It's not efficient, right? So I think those are the priorities that we need to put in place, is that realizing that, that our health and taking care of ourselves and losing weight and eating right, it's going to make you more productive, and it's going to allow you to work less hours because you're going to be way more productive in those hours you do work.
So in the time we have left here, can you give our listeners who are entrepreneurs trying to grow their cannabis businesses or growing businesses or whatever, or any business, two or three things that they need to look at in their own life to decide whether they really need to make a change?
Well, number one, if you can look down and you see, you can pinch more than an inch or two of belly fat, to me, that's like a reflection that, okay, you need to take action. If you can just lose a little bit of that, all of a sudden it just leaks right over into everything else that you do. So it's like a strange phenomenon, but when you have this anchor of diet and exercise in place, it's like all the stars align in all other areas of your life. And I think that we forget that. We use that we don't have time to prioritize our health, when in reality, it's the solution to our challenges, especially as entrepreneurs.
Is it hard? Was it hard for you to make the change?
Well, I think it's like anything. There's something we call Big Mo, and that's momentum. And I think it's important. And in my book, I use a 2-week acceleration phase, where we limit the choices a little bit more, simply to get the body fat adapted and create really fast results. And I think that's the momentum. That at first it's really, really hard, but if you see really fast results in the first 7 to 14 days, that creates that Big Mo, that momentum that can propel you forward to make it part of your life. And I think that's the thing about my book, is different than everything else out there. These crash diets, keto, paleo, they eliminate carbs. Are you really ever going to eat carbs again for the rest of your life? So not only that, my diet is actually a lifestyle, not some quick fix or crash diet that limits food choices, makes it difficult to adhere to, creates deficiencies. And so I think that that's the key too, is finding something that you can follow long term and not something that's just going to be like a 7-day diet.
So Joel, tell us the title of your book and where can we get it?
It's called Always Eat After 7 p.m. It's the revolutionary rule-breaking diet that lets you enjoy huge dinners, desserts, and indulgent snacks while burning fat overnight. And you can learn all about it at joelmarion.com. That's joelmarion.com.
And where can you buy? Can you buy the where can our listeners get the book?
You can buy it there at joelmarion.com. Yep, you can buy it at Amazon, and you can also get it at bookstores as soon as they start reopening.
Okay, terrific. We've been speaking to Joel Marion, who has been giving us advice as entrepreneurs how we can control our weight and be productive and spend more time with our families. And thank you for joining us today.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Hello, this is Dan Perkins for your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans, Tip of the Day. Did you know the unemployment rate for veterans is 12.5%? Because of the pandemic, the number of homeless veterans is increasing rapidly. In fact, there are waiting lists at VA shelters for people to come. Many of the veterans who go to the homeless shelters find themselves without decent shoes to go out and apply for a job. They come to the VA and they get health care, clothing, food, but they can't get shoes and socks. That's why we started the program. We are in our fourth annual Shoes and Socks for Homeless Veterans Drive. If you want to help, go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us and click on the Amazon button where you can order shoes and socks that are sent directly to me, and I will deliver them to the VA facility so veterans will get shoes and socks. That's songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us, Amazon button. This is Dan Perkins for your Veterans Tip of the Day.
Welcome back to the conversation, and today we're going to talk about what a business needs to do as it prepares to come out on the other side of the COVID-19 virus. And joining us today is Phil Silverman, who's an attorney and specializes in the cannabis industry. He's written an article on 10 things that are important for businesses, not only cannabis, but every business that's dealing with this issue of what do they do on the other side or getting ready for the other side. So, Phil, thank you for joining us today.
You bet. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Why did you decide to put the list of 10 things together?
Well, in particularly with cannabis, the industry has largely grown over the last 10 to 15 years at a time when everybody was experiencing an economic upturn. So it's never known any kind of a recession or a difficult economic time for the most part. And so when COVID-19 came, it became evident to me that a lot of companies were going to suddenly deal with something they'd never had to deal with before. I guess I couldn't have necessarily anticipated, you know, that some states would try to sort of shut these businesses down for a period of time, but I certainly could anticipate that there would be an impact upon revenues for most of these companies and their ability to do business in general. And so we felt like, given these entirely new economic circumstances that a lot of these companies would be in, that it would be timely to talk to them about how you deal with that on a day-to-day basis.
Speaking of the tips, let's deal with as many as we can in our time. First one, number one, sure, on your list is don't ignore signs of trouble.
Yep. So this is the most common thing, and it's whether it's in a business, individuals do the same thing. People have a tendency to bury their head in the sand, hope it goes away. And it's just not a viable strategy. A lot of the types of things that, you know, you might need to do to respond to these types of problems require planning and forethought. And if you're just hoping it goes away, oftentimes the problem just becomes so overwhelming over time that you can't effectively ever deal with it. So, you know, we advise people to, you know, get in touch with whether it's your accountant, an attorney, but somebody that can sort of help you think about what your future is going to be like, because you need to be able to prepare for it.
Do you think that, given, as you pointed out a few moments ago, the early success of these businesses, that they were less prepared, less disciplined perhaps than the typical mom and pop, or about the same?
It's probably the same. But again, yeah, I mean, it's just nobody has really thought of how this was going to impact them, because they've just never seen it before. And, you know, the reality is, in most states, if you are able to get licensed and get yourself open, The supply is, you know, significantly less than demand, so you'll do pretty well. But there are some states where that's not quite the case, where, you know, the price of the product has come down so significantly, the margins are so much less that it becomes, you know, very competitive. And even a drop of 10 or 15% in revenue, which might be caused by an economic downturn, can really make it difficult in this industry. And people just aren't used to that.
So I read an article, I'll do a spot on our next show, where a company bought four dispensaries in the state of Ohio that were in business, and they paid $395,000 per dispensary. Now, I've had numerous people on the show that say the dispensaries can run anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. So I can only conclude that the dispensary operators that sold the four dispensaries must have taken a really big hit in terms of their original capital invested in those dispensaries. But until we see the deal close, we don't know for sure. Tell us a little bit about your practice.
So I started out years ago. I got into the insolvency bankruptcy business working here in Boston, Massachusetts, and did that for quite a while. And then about 6-7 years ago, when medical marijuana was legalized here in Massachusetts, a family member actually, who happens to be a doctor here, decided that he wanted to get into the industry and asked me if I'd help him get licensed. And I did, learned about what was going on in the industry, and got myself involved, and then found a job with a national firm called Vicente Cederberg, which has been doing this in Colorado and a bunch of other states all over the country. And, you know, so for the last 4.5 years, I've been affiliated with that firm and doing a lot of, you know, sort of local stuff where I'm going in front of communities and trying to convince communities to allow my clients to operate there, which is always an interesting situation because it's so new to so many of these communities.
Right.
And there's a fair amount of resistance, but, you know, that's what I've been doing. And now we're sort of moving over into doing some of the insolvency type work with companies that might be having some problems.
And you said at your number two point that not all creditors are created equal.
Yeah. So, you know, the tendency in a lot of these companies is that they start getting phone calls. They are unable to make all of their payments to creditors, and they start getting phone calls. And if you're not used to that, it's a difficult thing to deal with, okay? You know, most of the people in the industry, they're used to being able to pay their bills on time. In my line of work, it doesn't work that way. And you need to be able to talk to those creditors, but you also need to be able to figure out, to be blunt, who needs to get paid and who doesn't. And it sort of depends upon the priorities of your organization. There may be some creditors that you can find similar services from other vendors out there. And so those are creditors. I'm not suggesting that you're just going to go away and never pay them, but you probably have a little bit more leverage to try to work out a better repayment arrangement, whether it's at a discount or over time, that can help you. And if all you do is just sort of open the checkbook and write a check to everybody, you'll probably end up not solving your problem in the long run. So you need to sort of have a plan.
And number three kind of fits with what you said. And number two, don't avoid difficult phone calls.
That is, to be honest, the key to everything. People tend to just let those calls go. The creditor gets more angry, and that's where litigation ensues. And it's particularly difficult if you get to that point in this particular industry where something like a bankruptcy isn't really available to you in general. That litigation can really harm you. So from the get-go, you want to return those calls, and you want to be pretty transparent about what's going on. And you find that if you do that, a lot of the creditors will actually work with you rather than be confrontational and make your life more difficult.
Okay, and then you say engage your accountant.
Yeah, you know, people might not be surprised to know that Not every one of these businesses has the best handle on their financial situation all the time. People mm-hmm. have a tendency to sort of operate day to day without really looking into the future about where this business is heading. Your accountant can tell you all sorts of things about what's really going on with your business and in terms of the trends, you know, how, what your revenues look like, what your collections look like, all the different numbers analysis, for lack of a better term, that tell you what your business is. And so you need them, you know, they can help you there, and they can help you. There's other matters, especially when you're dealing with resolving debt, where just, you know, for example, if you are, you know, in financial trouble, you may try to do something where you take a debt and you settle it and pay some discounted amount. Let's say you owe $100,000. You get a mm-hmm. settlement with the creditor to pay $50,000, but the $50,000 that you're not paying back is treated by the IRS as income. It's called forgiveness of debt income. And so you need to account for that. You need to you know, have a plan for making sure that gets paid, or there are ways that actually it won't be counted as income, but it's a bit of a complex accounting effort that needs to figure that out. And so you really do need a good accountant when you're doing these types of things.
Number five says, seek advice before transferring assets from a troubled entity.
Sure. So another one of the most common things that people do when they get in trouble is they decide, well, I am going to take this very valuable asset. Let's just, you know, hypothetically say in this situation, I'm going to take, I own some real estate where, you know, the cannabis company grows its product. And I'm going to transfer that real estate to another entity because I don't want that real estate to get caught up in all the debt problems. I don't want the creditors to get at it. Those things, that type of a situation or circumstance, that type of a transfer can almost always be reversed later on by a court, and it puts you in a very bad light in front of a court. It can also lead to even worse problems where, for example, you know, individuals associated with that corporation could potentially even be held personally liable for attempting to evade their creditors, or you know, in a non-bankruptcy context, it could even be grounds for not allowing somebody to discharge their debts in bankruptcy if that happens. So it may be your first instinct, but it's a pretty bad instinct most of the time.
Do you have these 10 points on your website?
We have them on our website. Yep, we do. Okay. I think that's been
okay. So let's do one more, and then we'll let our audience go to your website and learn more about you, but also learn about the other points. This one is kind of intriguing to me. It says number six is to pay the taxes and employee wages. Now, if you're in a cash flow problem, how do you pay the taxes and employee wages?
Well, and listen, I'm not suggesting that it is available to you in every instance. What I can tell you is, if you have a choice between doing that and paying, you know, other creditors, almost all the time you're better off paying the taxes and the employee wages, because not paying those, first of all, for example, with taxes, it's an enormous, there's an interest rate associated with it. And those taxes, you know, interest and penalties, and they add up significantly, and it becomes much harder later on to solve those problems. With something like employee wages, I can tell you, for example, in Massachusetts, if your company doesn't pay its employees, that the individual officers and directors can be held criminally liable for that non-payment.
Wow.
So it's if you have the choice, it's really something you want to make sure you give some priority to those types of debts.
Well, unfortunately, Phil, we're out of time. But as I said, I want you to give your website so the people can go look at the top 10 and look at the other ones that we didn't have time. So how can they reach out and contact you and get the rest of the top 10 list?
Yeah, it's VicenteCederberg.com. That's our law firm's website. You can look me up as well. I'm Phil Silverman, and happy to talk.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.